Welcome to the Medical Travel Show with your hosts, Elizabeth Zayemba and Irving Stackpole.
Welcome to the Medical Travel Show, the program for people interested in learning more about international health travel. This is Elizabeth Zayemba, and I'm here with my co-host, Irving Stackpole.
Hello, Elizabeth, and I want to thank you for being here today, and I'm very excited to introduce our next guest, Pam Frank. Pam is the Chief International Officer at Minnesota International Medicine. She's had an illustrious career in academic medicine and international business, and we are delighted to have you here with us today, Pam.
Well, thank you very much, Irving, and thank you, Elizabeth, for having me.
It's our pleasure. So let's get started and introduce you to our audience. So tell us a little bit about yourself. What first interested you in international healthcare and, in particular, international medical travel?
Well, you know, for me, it all came down to being in the right place at the right time. Initially, I was simply interested in leaving the manufacturing sector for the service sector. It was back in 1995. And the U.S. was clearly becoming a service-based economy, and I simply didn't want to be left behind. At the time, I was working for U.S. medical equipment manufacturers, setting up their Latin American distributorships, and the competition was coming on very strong from all over the globe. So I started to look for opportunities that would leverage my international MBA and Rolodex. And it was about that time when a number of U.S. academic medical centers were beginning to form a strategy for obtaining international patient referrals. It was a way that they could offset some of the pressures of the local HMOs. And I just was lucky to be living in Boston at that time, which is really a mecca for innovative healthcare. Back in, I think it was 1997, I helped Tufts Medical Center to launch their international patient program, and that was the beginning of my 17-year career in medical travel. I've had the opportunity to work with a number of top-ranked academic medical centers in the U.S. and abroad, helping them to develop their strategies, not just for patient referrals, which is now referred to as medical travel, but also for their international and global physician advisory and consulting services.
Well, that's a fascinating take on a track that has led you to your current position. The distinctive role of academic medical centers in international travel has been written about. Certainly, Mayo Clinic and Cleveland Clinic and Harvard and others have done some work to position themselves globally. Is there a role for, how do you see the role of academic medical centers in encouraging international medical travel?
You know, you raise a really good point. It did start off very slowly with a handful of very prestigious institutions, you know, Mayo, Cleveland, Hopkins, Mass General, all the Harvard, Boston Children's Group. But it has really grown since then. And it's grown not just for the, you know, within the U.S. So we have academic medical centers were the pioneers, and then the well-known ones were even within that subsector the first to market. We have over 100 academic medical centers as part of the whole U.S. There's over 6,000 hospitals in the U.S., and there's about 115 of them are U.S. academic medical centers. But we're seeing more and more people enter the market. And it's not just from the U.S. I mean, we've seen a huge increase in global players as well. I mean, I'm currently at Minnesota International Medicine. We're working with 8 different hospitals in the Twin Cities to help them increase their international patient referrals. And I think what really set off the global trend was after 9/11. It opened the door for hospitals in France and Germany and England to target the Gulf region patients who were just having difficulty obtaining visas to the U.S. And then shortly after that, we started to hear this buzzword of medical tourism. And I think that started primarily with the Southeast Asian hospitals. It clearly has grown to Eastern Europe, Korea, Latin America. And we're increasingly seeing this field of medical travel, which the U.S. academic medical centers kind of felt we had a foothold in. and a complete, at one point, monopoly for. And we're blurring the boundaries now with those, with that group, along with those that kind of entered into the marketplace for medical tourism reasons. I do think it's going to continue to grow as globalization and healthcare continues, as does subspecialization. But I don't think it's going to be as fast as everyone has thought. There's a number of conflicting variables out there. So, for example, we have an increase in demand. We know that the global population of high net worth individuals is increasing and that the global population is getting older. And we know that there's greater incidence of diseases around diabetes and cancer and cardiac. So that would bode towards the towards a growing market share. Mm-hmm. For the U.S., we see demand being limited somewhat by the rising number of foreign hospitals with U.S. accreditation. We also see a number of hospitals overseas that are affiliating themselves with U.S. and European hospitals, and then an increased number of U.S. trained physicians that are returning home. So we're struggling with competition from hospitals who are positioned as, offering equivalent quality care at lower costs. And many of these hospitals are closer to the patient's home countries. And then I think finally a third variable is that we're seeing a decrease in overall margins as the market matures. You know, I just mentioned on the supply side we have increased competition, both domestically and from overseas. Mm-hmm. But also the customer is just becoming much more informed. And when I say customer, I don't mean just the patient. I'm also looking at government payers, which was a big sector of our market for many, many years. And government payers are increasingly acting more like insurance companies. So we are seeing a downward, we're seeing a decrease in the overall profitability of the market. We know that historically patients have been traveling for better quality care and also for more advanced technology. The faster access and lower costs were usually secondary. But within the U.S., we need to really continue to focus on the better quality side and the higher advanced technology side. And so there's been a trend historically within the U.S. academic medical centers to focus on innovation as part of their research. Mm-hmm. But recently we've started to see a number of driving forces that are contributing to what they're now calling healthcare innovation. And those are academic medical centers that are dedicating resources to set up kind of incubator or accelerator programs to help their physicians innovate and commercialize their ideas. And the U.S. is really in a very well competitive position to leverage this. I mean, we have 3D printing now and crowdsourcing and digital healthcare. I mean, we're now talking about big data as much as we used to talk about electronic medical records. Mm-hmm. So it's my hope that we can keep the U.S. out on the forefront of this healthcare innovation and continue to draw medical travel for those really unique opportunities.
Do you see that happening? Is that more of a short-term, medium-term, or long-range goal for the U.S. market to remain and increase its competitiveness?
Well, again, it depends how we're going to define competitiveness. I think, access is not always the easiest variable for the U.S. to address, and clearly cost is not. So when we just look at quality care and advanced technology, I definitely would like to believe the U.S. is going to continue to be leading the global marketplace in those areas. Once again, the U.S. academic medical centers are spearheading these initiatives. So, we have Mount Sinai has set up a team of, 21 professionals called Innovation Partners Group, and they're helping their physicians and scientists to commercialize their ideas with patents and helping their physicians to develop spin-out companies. So, yes, and I've seen this trend taking place now. Here in Boston, they're doing an Innovation Healthcare Summit this week at Boston Children's Hospital. And I do believe this is going to be a push not only in order to keep the U.S. as the most advanced technology, but also as a way for healthcare reform and to help us decrease costs, which, as we all know, has been a major topic for the past few years.
Right. The drive for greater levels of efficiency in order to squeeze out costs in the bloated healthcare system in the United States. You mentioned costs as being one of the obstacles to foreign consumers availing themselves of American healthcare. Certainly, technology has a role in helping to squeeze out those costs. What other trends do you see? Do you see that the access by foreign consumers of the U.S. healthcare system, do you see frontiers out there where certain foreign nationals or certain technologies that are existing here will be accessed? What do you see on the horizon?
Where do I see as some of the major challenges, or where do I see the growth taking place from within the medical travel sector?
I was thinking about growth primarily, yeah.
You know, it's a little bit of the wild, wild west out there still when it comes to this industry. Although it's been around in the U.S. for the past 25 years, there's a lot of nascent players out there, certainly on the global market and even within the United States. So it's extremely dynamic and very fluid. And I do think there's a huge opportunity for hospitals and countries overseas that are interested in investing in this marketplace. There's clearly a trend in Europe right now to facilitate globalization of their healthcare systems and providers. We know that the trend right now has been to travel for, or historically has been to travel for, quality of care and for advanced technology, with access and cost being secondary. But I think as people become more and more cost sensitive, we're going to see commercial payers, even in the U.S., as well as certainly the self-insured companies, looking at other cost alternatives. And absolutely, it's going to increase to the supply for those foreign groups that are already starting to position themselves as regional centers of excellence.
Right. I was talking to an individual who heads up a branch of an American healthcare insurance company, and he was positively salivating over the fact that out-of-pocket healthcare costs in the United States have been rising pretty dramatically as a result of the Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare reform. So he was saying that this augurs well for American consumers leaving the U.S. market and consuming medical services elsewhere. Do you see the same trend?
Yes. Well, we've been hearing a lot of hype about that. We've been hearing about it. In fact, in my opinion, that's kind of what spurred the medical tourism industry overseas, was the kind of concern that there was going to be this huge exodus of U.S. patients abroad. And I think a lot of governments saw that as an opportunity to boost their, quite honestly, their Ministry of Tourism got on board and teamed up with their private and public hospital initiatives to create these clusters. And we saw cities like Medellin, Colombia, or we see Seoul, Korea, really investing a lot of funds into this. And to date, there hasn't been that huge exodus. There's a lot of difference of opinions out there. I happen to be living in Massachusetts, where Obamacare had a 5-year start on the rest of the country, and we're starting to see a leveling out of costs and hopefully an eventual decrease in costs. We know that healthcare costs have been spiraling upwards for decades now. Ideally, Obamacare is going to create some sort of down in the long run have a positive impact on costs. Right now, it's too early to tell. But in the end, I think it's a mistake for these foreign countries to assume and create some sort of forecast based on the sky that's falling due to Obamacare in the United States. I do think those countries that drank that Kool-Aid and got out on the forefront and are willing to make those initial investments in their regional centers of excellence, I do think they'll have a head start. And it is an important market, and it's not going to be all fueled by U.S. patients, you know, running away from the United States. But certainly they can start with regionals, and then slowly but surely the U.S. market is going to start to develop more commercial products to be able to send their members overseas for certain procedures.
Interesting.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you, Pam. I think that the long-term impact of the Affordable Care Act is still to be determined, certainly for the U.S. market, and that a lot of providers are going to be disappointed in the short term in terms of the numbers that they think that they can attract from the U.S. But I do want to ask you a little bit about your current position. We've talked a lot about academic medical centers and their role in the international medical travel sector. So, Pam, talk about some of the obstacles that academic medical centers face in attracting international patients.
Well, there have been a lot of challenges as these academic medical centers have kind of pioneered the industry. You know, first and foremost, they have is risk aversion. Hospitals were traditionally set up to be with a smaller catchment area. They are not dynamic, and the international marketplace really requires the ability to accept change and to accept risk. And so oftentimes what we saw was a misalignment between the strategic vision of the international programs and the governance of the international programs within the overarching hierarchy of the hospital. So I think a smaller hospital or a clinic or specialty clinical services, they are in a good position to be much more dynamic and be able to take on some additional risks. Other challenges that hospitals dealt with was a brand dilution. So if you're coming into the arena and you're okay with selling your brand and letting a foreign hospital affiliate with your U.S. brand, that will be a huge advantage, because most of the big-name hospitals and academic medical centers have pulled back from that. And I think, you know, just moving away from the entitlement attitude. For a long time, and it wasn't until after 9/11 did we start to realize, oh, we have to work hard for these patients. And so beginning your international partnerships as you start to form them, it's a real sense of being gracious and not being entitled will help any new players to the market.
Well, these are all terrific points, and I would welcome the opportunity to invite you back to delve into several of these areas. I think you've hit upon some excellent, rich veins of information and ideas that we could explore. In case our audience wants to get in touch with you, what is the best way for them to reach you, Pam?
Sure. Well, you can always reach me over email. My email address is pfrank, like my name, at MN for Minnesota, mnimed.com. You can find me on LinkedIn, and you can also check out our website at mnimed.com.
Terrific. Thank you so much, Pam, for sharing your insights and your experience with us. It's always a delight to talk with you.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
This is Elizabeth Ziemba, and you've been listening to The Medical Travel Show.